Hey guys, this is Pete from Red Flag. Thanks for checking out the reading and the interview with Daryl Mironica and his poem. Be sure to check out all of the other great stuff we have on the website. Subscribe to the postcards and Poetry Express, our digital endeavor. Thanks.
I guess we'll start where I always start and by asking the poets, what's the most interesting or fun or exciting piece of USPS certified mail, or however you want to say it, that you've ever received?
Oh, the most interesting piece of mail is actually fairly recently was the proof to the book that this poem is actually in. So that book was just published at the end of April, Hanami, and this poem was actually part of that. It's actually part of a longer poem. It's a series of four poems that comes from a road trip that we took. But that was the most interesting piece of mail, and I was expecting it. It was actually kind of anxious waiting for it. I knew it was on its way, so book proof.
And that book that you just mentioned, what's going on? Is that able to be found on, like, Amazon?
Yeah. If you go onto Amazon and just Google Hanami and my name, then, or actually if you just Google my name, that's actually one of the things I've discovered as the longer I've been writing is I'm like the only Daryl Mironica writing. So if you Google my name, or actually if you just Google me, usually it's me. So I've actually found that to be pretty funny, as opposed to like some of my other friends who are musicians or other writers who have names that are a little more common. It's easier to find me.
I am one of seven Fazianis in the United States, and I'm the only Peter Faziani. So I know exactly what you're saying. You know, you can always, your internet footprint, you know, is yours. There's no question about it. So yeah. So about your book, this is a longer section that's all about a road trip. Right. When did this take place? Was it recent? Was it?
Let's see, this was in the spring of. It was in May of 2000. So it's been a while. I lived in Japan for 3 years, and just before I left, actually, everybody was on this trip. We were all getting ready to leave Japan. We were all working as English teachers, and we decided to take a road trip. There's a period of time in Japan called Golden Week, and it's three holidays that are really close together, and so sometimes you can take a couple vacation days, string them together for one long day period, and we did that, and we took this road trip, and we actually were going to just look for campsites, and that day we actually didn't have one, and we were kind of like, hopefully we'll find something. And we found this campsite that had just opened. It wasn't actually completed yet. So they basically told us, you know, put the tent wherever. And it was really cold because it was up in the mountains, and it got below freezing, which is where a lot of the poem is set, that it was actually so cold that I actually dreamed that I was dreaming about sleeping in this cold tent. But yeah, it was a nice road trip. I mean, it was a time for us to really kind of have one last experience together as this group of friends that we were, because once we left Japan, we were all going to different places and different things. So
sure. Since this was obviously an experience from 2000, how does that, like, did you write this poem immediately after? Have you been working on it for the past 15 years? Or, I mean, how does that, I always find this very interesting when I look back on a memory and I say, well, this is what I remember, but this is how I remember it in terms of how they differ. But as far as poetry goes, do you believe that this is an accurate representation, or does that, has memory and time shifted your understanding of this experience?
See, I wrote when I was still in Japan. I mean, that was a period where 3 years where I really didn't write very much, and it took a couple of years after I left for me to really restart. You know, I'd done my MFA in the mid-90s, and then I was writing really intensely, and then I went to Japan, and I just stopped. And then I came back to the United States, and I eventually settled in the Boston area. And after a couple of years, I really then went back and started writing. And so this poem is probably about 10 years old, and so it was written about 5 years later. And it's as accurate as my recollection is of it. And I mean, if you ask Mark, who's Delgado in the poem, he might have a different memory of it. But yeah, the four parts to this poem, to this longer work, they all are sort of like snapshots of that trip. And some of the things that I've been thinking about now, as this book came out, since this book has a lot of older poems in it, as in this whole process of getting the book out, I've had to read all of these old poems again and revisit some of these memories and old works. And in some cases, you know, I've shifted to a totally different idea of things. And in this particular case, in this particular poem, it feels very, my memory feels very close to it, and the things that are in this section in the, you know, in this whole road trip work, it's very nostalgic to me. I mean, I feel very attached to it, and, you know, my feelings towards it haven't really changed, but it's not true of all of them, but this one, it was. I mean, it was a very special trip. I mean, you know, one of the things that I remember from it is we rented a van, and the rental company told us that this van will fit five adults and one small child uncomfortably. And everyone was sort of like, well, you know, rental companies are always telling you to go to the bigger size, because they were telling us to go to the bigger size. But we found out that Japanese rental companies actually tell you pretty much the truth, and it was a fun trip, but it was a very uncomfortable one as we're squeezed into this van. Where I remember a friend of mine and I were sitting in the smallest seats, and we were actually leaning back and facing each other, and our legs were sort of crossed upward, forming this weird X, because we actually couldn't put our feet all the way down because there was no space. It was a very strange trip, but it's memory. So reading the poem sort of triggers memories like that of you know, it was just a good trip that I felt very good about. So.
Yeah, well, that leads me kind of to my next question. When you sit down to write a poem, where do you, as a poet, where do you begin? Like, what's the writing process for you?
When I start writing a poem, usually I have some sort of experience. You know, like, lately it's been my kids. My kids will say something or do something, or something like that. It'll create some sort of experience, and I have a feeling towards it. And then I usually just let it sit for a couple of days, and I mull it over. I let it sort of ferment, and then I start to write. But I actually don't write anything down. I sort of go over the first few lines in my head for a few days, and then put it down on paper. So I started doing that mostly because I was writing a lot of bits and pieces of things that I really didn't like and not getting very far. So I wanted to figure out a way of writing that anytime I was going to sit down and write on a piece of paper, I was just going to create a whole draft. So I started this process of just mulling things over in my head. And in part because I have a couple of small children, I just don't have a lot of time to just sit down and write. I, you know, when I get 5 or 10 minutes to sit and write, I just want to jump right into it. So the writing process for me, the first few days of it, actually, for a new poem, really exists in my head. It lives in my head, and I do a lot of initial drafting that way. And then what I found is that when I then sit down and write, it all sort of comes out, not necessarily the way I thought about it, but it all sort of comes out more formed than I used to get. A little more, it sort of just plops out, which is nicer for me, you know, and then I can go back and I improvise after that. But I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody.
No, yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
So it's more of an experience before it becomes a written thing.
Right.
It's very, yeah.
Do you have any poets or specific books of poetry that have influenced you in terms of making you decide, this is why I want to be a poet? Do you have any poets that you go to on the shelf frequently?
Yeah, actually. Naomi Shihab Nye was my first poetry teacher. I was an undergraduate and she was a visiting writer. And I had reached that point that a lot of people do in college where, you know, the thing that I thought I was going to do is not going to happen. I just don't want to do that. And I was really kind of searching for something that I wanted to do. And I met Naomi and I thought, you know, that her being a poet was really cool. And she was actually really, really generous with me and really kind of helped me out and gave me a lot of encouragement. And she's been actually really generous with me for a lot of years. I mean, we've managed to write from time to time, you know, short notes, or I'll send something to her and I'll ask her opinion. And she wrote a blurb for this book, which I'm eternally grateful for. But yeah, you know, and a lot of her poems that I've read over the years, you know, like there's one, What Brings Us Out, which is, it's about a lot of things, but poems, there's a number of her poems that felt really human to me, and I really enjoyed the way she used language and humanized even some pretty tough subjects. And that's been something that, you know, when I had tougher periods of writing, I kind of go back to, and she, you know, a couple of her books are in my toolbox, the stack of books that I always refer to whenever I have an idea. I mean, there's a couple of her books. There's Gary Snyder's Rip Rap and Cold Mountain Poems. You know, there's Kathy Song's first book, Picture Bride, is another one where these are all books that you know, they've traveled with me from like when I was still with my parents in Hawaii to when I went to graduate school in Washington State, when I went to Japan, and have followed me here. So they've really come, you know, 20,000 miles with me, and so, you know, Naomi's poems have really always centered me, grounded me, you know, when I feel like I'm getting a little bit off track. So,
I mean, speaking that, I guess, kind of that you started in undergrad, has your definition or understanding of poetry changed over the course of your experience?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I believe so. You know, poetry is a lot tougher than I'm of the opinion now that poetry is a lot tougher than it was when I was younger. I think I had a more naive outlook on it, but I do think it's a tough form of writing. I think it's far more resilient. It's far more robust than I thought it was too. I can do more with a poem than I can with other things, and I think that's true of when I read other people's works, is that there's more of an immediacy to it because there's so much compression in a poem. A poem really depends on all that language being stuffed together in a little tiny sock or something. And you know, you have to really shove it in there. And so it's a very dense thing. And I think it's great. you know. But yeah, I think I had a much, I think I really underestimated poetry when I was starting out.
I took my first real creative writing class at a community college, and I mean, the poetry I wrote there versus the poetry that I try to write now, I mean, they're two different things. Whether one's better than the other or not, I guess I can never say, but they're two different things. So yeah, I mean, that's, I really like that description of the sock. I think that's very, very apt. I think that's very good.
Yeah, no, and it's been something that I've been thinking about for a while. I've been working on a memoir project of when I was in Japan, and, you know, with prose, I really feel like, you know, I can expand out, I can get more into details, I can get more into the nuances in some ways, but I can never, I don't think it has the same capacity for that dense experience that, that, you know, and it's like the difference between like a wrench and a hammer. I mean, it's two different tools,
right.
But that's where poetry lies and that's where its strengths lie. And I just think that, yeah, you really are shoving things into that. Is this, and granted the sock stretches, but you know, it only goes so far.
Right, it has a breaking point.
Right.
And much like a sock, if you put something sharp in there, it's going to change the way that it,
right,
that it functions. You know, like, I think that's a very appropriate comparison there, because the sock, I mean, it's really great.
Yeah. Well, there's a saying in Tai Chi about, Tai Chi is like steel wrapped with wool. And poetry is kind of like that too. It is sort of like steel wrapped with wool. It's like, you know, still got that core inside. It's tough and strong, but it's soft on the outside. And I think that's deceptive, is that people kind of are deceived by what looks like a soft outside.
I guess my last question for you is kind of a, it's a broader question. I mean, I started Red Flag because I wanted to give people a reason to go to their mailbox. I love getting the mail. I don't care if it's a bill, junk mail, or whatever. There's always some type of excitement for me. So I wanted to give people that excitement. But now, as I've progressed in terms of defining what Red Flag is to me, it's got a lot more to do with social media and the internet and how we separate ourselves from this thing that is the internet. I mean, but at the same time, we can never do it wholeheartedly, because that's, otherwise we wouldn't be able to be talking right now, you know. How does the internet, in your opinion, and things like social media, how does that play into your writing and reading of poetry?
That's a really interesting question. One of the reasons why I originally submitted to Red Flag is I thought the idea was such a great idea, and one of the things when I was in graduate school that we were really into was sending postcards. Wherever you are, collect postcards. You know, it's like, and it couldn't be like you just go somewhere, you buy a bunch of postcards. Someone actually had to go there, buy the postcard, mail it, and you had to have that experience. And that, you know, that's a different kind of social media. And I thought that was such a great idea. I felt, you know, there was something tactile about it. And you know, I haven't really thought very much about, you know, before this, about, you know, the internet and poetry. I mean, you know, I think the internet has changed how we transmit poetry. You know, I have to admit, this is the one question that's been bouncing around in my head that I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to answer.
Right. I mean, and that's why I created Poetry Express, you know, because I realized that not everyone enjoys the mail as much as me, but they still enjoy poetry. So how do I reach those people as well? And I mean, and realistically, the internet allows me to transmit, send, communicate that much faster.
Right.
So, I mean, I can do the poem for the Express poetry, set everything up, do the email, that day, it's gone.
Right.
Whereas the postcard takes me more time, and it takes time to get to you, the subscriber, and there's a lot more time into it. So, I mean, but I think at the heart, I want them to be the same thing. Let's put it that way. I want them to be the same experience, though I don't know if they are.
I think they're fairly close. I mean, like, I get, for example, I get, you know, poets.org has a poem of the day email that they send out every day. It's a poem. And you get it every day, and I get it, and I read it. I like to try and read it early in the morning, but, you know, my kids don't always let me. And I look forward to that. I mean, that's the kind of thing where yeah, the internet and email and social media really do. And I'm on Facebook. I'm on all these poetry related groups where, you know, poetry challenges and whatever, and we communicate very rapidly. You know, just, you know, like when a new place to submit something opens up, you know. Suddenly, you know, whereas before you might have to peruse through magazines and just figure out stuff, now you've got like people talking about it. I submitted here, or I just heard about this, and, you know, or they'll see something that you wrote and say, hey, you know, you should think about this place. I think everything happens so much faster, including submissions, to the point where I find it dizzying. Like 10 years ago, if I got out 30 submission packets in a year, that was a lot. Now it's like, if I do it, I do it, you know, because it's on the internet, and it, you know, you got all these submission engines, and, you know, I'm doing like 100, and, you know, everything has moved so much faster, and it's easier, in some ways, it's easier to track where things are going and what's going on. You see things more in real time. And at the same time, I kind of miss the waiting. You know, it's like, you know, I know this is going to get to them in like 4 or 5 days or whatever. It's like, instead of I hit this button and it's there, you know, it's
right,
like, you
right.
know, yeah, I feel both, you know, I actually kind of like it. I kind of like how poetry is adapting to the internet and to social media, to the technology that we have. I think it's making things faster and more transparent. I like that you did start the Poetry Express. I think that was a great addition. But I have to admit, though, I get to the beginning of the month, because I am a subscriber, and I do look forward to getting that postcard.
Right.
See
right.
where it's coming from. I do enjoy that. I think there's space for both, and I don't know if they're necessarily the exact same experience, but I don't think that's really the point. I think it's just one more experience. It's one more way to experience poetry. And that's, again, speaks to the resilience of it all. And one of the reasons why I don't think poetry is actually going anywhere. I know people, you know, you read every 6 months somebody talking about the death of poetry, but I really don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, people like poems. I mean, even if only 2%, I've read an article where the readership of poetry in America is 2%, that's still millions of people reading poetry. You know?
That's true. That's true.
And so, you know, we're not going anywhere. And as a poet, I'm really encouraged by that. I mean, I love going to bookstores and seeing all the journals and all the, you know, some that are just only poetry. And, you know, but at the same time, the number of e-journals and venues in which I can see poems online just whenever I want, it's great. I love the variety. I love the expansiveness.
It's certainly opened up the world a little bit more.
I don't know if I answered your question at all.
No, you did perfectly. You did. So, yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Your book. Tell us again what the title of your book is, and we'll go look for it on Amazon.
All right. The book is called Hanami, and it's Hanami. I also have a chapbook coming out over the summer called The Minstrel of Belmont, and that will be that's through Finishing Line Press. Hanami's through Aldrich Press, and they sell through Amazon. And I encourage people to go check it out, because, you know, it's my book.